I am now going to bring in the authors of Millennial Makeover, MySpace, YouTube, and the Future of American Politics. And let me read you first a fortuitous thing which happened yesterday, which is that New York Times critic Michiko Kakutani named this book one of the 10 favorite books of 2008. And I'm going to read the quote. In what turns out to have been a highly prescient book, the two authors predicted that 2008 would be a change election informed by new technology and by the outlook of a new generation of millennial voters who tend to be more inclusive, optimistic, and tech-savvy than their elders. And Kakutani, when the book had come out, had liked the book but said that she didn't have faith that it would actually come true. Morley Winograd is the executive director of the Center for Telecom Management at the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business and served as a senior policy advisor to Vice President Al Gore during the second term of Bill Clinton's administration. Michael Hayes is retired as the Vice President of Entertainment Research at the communications research firm Frank N. McGid. Welcome, Morley Winograd.
Thank you. Delighted to be back.
And Michael Hayes.
Hello. Glad to be there, Terrence.
Great. Thank you, Mike. I'm glad you could make it. And let me just share with the audience that I met you guys. I told Morley this when we went in the studio. Mike's on the phone. Mutual friend, I guess, Hugh Kaufman, has these occasional salons, and several months back he had one, and sitting under the heat on in his backyard, you guys presented the book, and I don't know if you had said, if you would have bet everything that day that it would turn out the way you planned and that the New York Times would say what they said. Either of you want to take that?
Well, it was a hot day, and so I can't quite remember what we said, but I do remember that on Friday, September 19th, on the week that the financial system of the United States melted down, we were asked point blank on a different television show, a public television show, whether millennials would be the difference in the election for Obama. And my colleague, Mike Hayes, who does all the data, produced a number that said, oh, they'll probably give him about a 7 million vote margin on election day, and that should be enough to do it. And actually, they gave him almost exactly that. 80% of his 8.5 million margin came from millennials, and most of his 7 percentage point popular vote lead came from millennials.
Okay, thank you. Mike, I'll let you take this one next, just to keep the ball rolling. As I said to Drew Weston, my previous guest, in some sense, I have two basic questions. The first question is, what does the book say? You know, what did it say? What does it say in the big picture? What's the research that it's based on? What does it tell us about this generation? And one of the numbers that most shocked me was you said the millennials are the largest generation. They are actually going, they are or are going to be bigger than the boomers. And then how what you predicted, what you said, what you saw played out in the election. So.
Okay, well, that's a lot. And let me start. The book posits that there are four generational types that recur throughout American history, and one type of them is and two of those four types produce major political change, or in the terms of political science use, political realignments. And those realignments occur every 40 years as one of these two dynamic types of generations comes of age. The one that has just taken place about a month ago, November 4th, was produced by a civic generation, which is a generation of doers, builders, is a generation that rebuilds political institutions after years of deadlock and gridlock and ideological strife. And so the millennial generation is the most recent civic generation in American history, and it is doing, and it did on November 4th, exactly that. The generations, these realignments occur not only when a new generation comes of age, but they also occur as a result of a concurrent rise in a new media technology, a new form of communication. In this instance, it's the social network, internet-based social networking communications, which the millennials use to rally themselves, and others can use to rally them. So that, essentially, is the core of the book that we have gone through. At the time we wrote the book, a year and a half before the election, we predicted there would be a realignment, and I think we have certainly seen the beginnings of that in 2008.
Let me ask a quick question just for a listener who kind of heard that. Give me an example of a previous alignment, a previous generation, and the aspects of them.
OK, Okay, well, there were two the most recent one previous to that. The one most immediately previous to that occurred in the late 1960s around the 1968 election of Richard Nixon, and that was brought about by the second type of generation that brings these things about. That was the baby boomers, which until the millennials came along was the largest generation in American history. But unlike the millennials, who are driven by a need to rebuild institutions, to work together in a unified fashion, the boomers were an ideological generation that was divided very strongly along gender lines, along ideological lines, along racial lines, and the result of that was the divisions that we've seen in American politics for the past 40 years. And the realignment prior to the baby boomer realignment in the late 60s was the realignment brought about in the early 1930s, around 1932 with the election of Franklin Roosevelt, by the civic generation, the GI generation, Tom Brokaw's greatest generation, which instituted the role of the government in the economy, eventually won World War II for the United States. And so those were the two most recent realignments.
And I would say, Terry, that your audience is probably saying, well, wait a minute. Boomers couldn't have led a conservative makeover of American politics led by Richard Nixon, because we're, after all, the generation that produced, you know, the anti-Vietnam War movement, the civil rights movement, and so forth.
Gay rights, feminism,
you name it.
Civil rights.
And the only trouble with that is that, of course, it's only half the boomer generation who did all that. The other half are the George W. Bush boomers. Both Clinton and Bush are boomers, and they both behave very similarly despite their polar opposite ideas. They both are convinced that the way you win in politics is to argue your side until the other side gives up and you drive home the ideology. And of course, as your previous guest just talked about, you use emotion to accomplish all that and so forth. But that's not where millennials are at. Millennials are raised watching Barney. They're looking for consensus, win-win solutions by the group, and they want to see things, in the words of President-elect Obama, get done.
One last little question about this definition of generations and so on is, Mike linked the millennials to a technology of social networking. What was the technology linked to the boomers, the technology linked to the New Deal generation?
Boomers were the television generation, still are, spending a lot of their time watching television, and the GI generation was the radio generation. It was motivated and mobilized by FDR's soothing voice and fireside chats.
Okay, so, and the thing that you just said was that the reason that the boomers could start out with the eruptions of the 60s and end up with basically 30 years of the Reagan era is because that ideological opposition was played better by the right, which in some sense Drew Westen explained.
Well, that's true, but the other thing that the conservative side of the boomers had going for them is that the generation that followed boomers before we got to millennials, Generation X, is a Ronald Reagan conservative generation by and large. And actually, millennials are the first generation in four decades where more members of that generation call themselves liberals than call themselves conservatives. But the most conservative generation we've ever seen is the Gen X generation. They voted for John McCain in the last election.
Uh-huh. Now, when we look at this, and I've often thought with young people, and millennials are by definition young people.
26 and under.
Okay, born
between 1982 and 2003.
Okay, so you guys out there, you know whether you are they. When, again, 89 and 2003?
Between 82 and 2003.
82 and 2003, so 20-year span there. One of the things that it always occurred that I've always thought about is that if you're growing up and Reagan is president, while you're growing up, you kind of begin in your mind, you're not a sophisticated analyst, you go, presidents are Reagan, you know, hero, President Reagan. You know, I mean, when I first started following politics, it was Ike and then it was Kennedy and, you know, that was that. And so that does have a power, doesn't it?
Well, certainly Reagan had a great positive influence for the Republican Party on Gen Xers as they were growing up. And by
the same token, I would think the millennials, having watched the disastrous effects of the Bush generation,
it certainly didn't hurt. But even before Bush's mistakes, you had a trend towards democratic thinking around the importance of group decision making and the collective minds of people and the need to work on behalf of the commons was all built around the millennials' television, toddler television programs. and the kinds of things their parents were teaching them.
So the boomers at least created some television programs.
Well, I've heard it described that while the boomers may not have been particularly good at governing a nation, they were very good at raising children.
It isn't just the TV shows they put out or the young adult literature they put out. It was also the way they parented. They, in other words, what you're saying is they instilled, and this is Mike Hayes and Morley Winograd, authors of Millennial Makeover, they instilled some of the values which we now see finally come into play?
Or as one angry husband said in a program where Mike and I were talking about this, and he was a very conservative husband to his liberal boomer wife, because the boomers are often divided by gender on ideology. I told you, it's all your fault. You should never have raised them that way.
But it's interesting because even conservative boomer parents and actually Gen X parents, because millennials, like all generations, half the generation was raised by the second oldest generation, and then the other half was raised by the next oldest generation. But even those relatively conservative people still raise their children to be group-oriented, to be non-prejudiced. And so the variety, so all the kind of attitudes that typify the millennial generation were in many respects taught to them by their parents, even though their parents may have been conservative themselves.
You could almost trace the success of President Obama's campaign, who is himself a boomer born but very millennial-minded, to the Bill Cosby show and the Huxtables, which taught America how to raise millennial kids.
Mm-hmm. So how do you guys interpret Obama? As you say, he's among the very last of the boomer generation, yet he has a millennial mindset. A lot of people attribute it to his having been born in one place and of one, you know, a mixed race and mixed cultures and so on. What do you attribute it to?
Well, all of that's true, but it's also true about where he was born amongst the boomers. There's a so-called Jones generation effect. You can look up their website. It's the last 4 or 5 years on the cusp of the boomers before they became Gen Xers. There's no such thing as a 5-year generation, but it does capture a particular mindset of young people growing up and almost having a disdain for their older siblings and the way they behaved, but not really knowing where they fit in. And he is definitely from that milieu. In fact, our book opens with his speech in Selma, Alabama, in March of 07, where he said, Hillary's a boomer. She's one of those great Moses generations that have wonderful ideas. I'm from the Joshua generation. After that Moses generation does its thing, we go out there, we tear down the walls and build a real community, and that's what we're going to do.
Mm. I think you could see comments that he would make that even though he was a very late boomer, he recognized the divisions within the boomer generation, and he would very specifically say that he was not into those divisions, and that's not the way he was going to run a campaign, and that's not.
And even when the politics got hot and people were saying, we need to attack McCain, or the commentators say there's not enough red meat at the Democratic convention, he would always pull back and say, that's not the politics I'm going to run in this campaign. I'm not going to do boomer politics.
Now, except for your book, my guess is most people thought this is a unique Obama quality, right? People always said, how does he do it? You know, he stuck so much to that. He doesn't let himself get caught up. But you're saying it wasn't just Obama. It's a whole way. It's a whole approach.
It's a whole approach. And, you know, obviously he has enormous talent in executing that approach. But, you know, his campaign manager, David Axelrod, said, my job in the White House is to make sure the vision and values of the president are completely communicated to everybody else. They all get the notion that this has to be something different.
Okay, and one other thing I remember that really stuck in my mind when I first started looking at your book and listening to you guys talk about it was, you said, where do people get their values in some sense, but not quite. I'm using the word wrong. But you said how, like, the boomers or a lot of people rely on experts. And you said that what's different about the millennials is they depend on each other through their social networking. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think that is certainly true. It's not that they have total disdain for experts, although to some extent they do, but they have even greater value on the decisions of the group, because they believe that there is a wisdom in what their friends are doing, what their friends are saying and thinking, and so they work with one another, they communicate with one another through the social networking to come up with group decisions on issues as basic as, you know, what we're going to do today, but also on something even of global, much more global importance. How are we going to vote? What are the policies of government? And so on. And I think that what in their day-to-day lives, since it seems to work pretty well, they are into that group kind of decision making. There's a very clear belief that everybody in the group has value, everybody in the group has importance, and everybody's point of view should be considered. And in that way, they were able to accomplish what they need to.
Okay, let me throw. Oh, Mike, Morley.
No, I just want to reinforce what Mike said. That's why they were so good at mobilizing the vote. Is they use those technologies to tell each other what to do and how, where to go and how to get the vote out and convince others to do so.
So to some extent, the way that 40 years ago, a labor union or a city machine would be able to get out the vote, Obama's campaign using these social networking, using these young people, was able to get out the vote more than anyone expected they would be able to.
More, a larger turnout army than any of us who used to be political hacks have ever seen, and certainly demonstrated in this campaign that without social network strategies in the heart of a campaign, you're going to lose.
I have two questions, and if you can answer them briefly, either of you. One is, so you're heralded as prescient and so on. What surprised you? The other one is, how does this generation respond to the crisis it's facing right now in the economy?
Well, I'll take the latter one and let
okay.
Mike decide on the surprise.
Okay.
Civic generations, the last one being the GI generation and one at the time of the Civil War, have always come of age at a time of great crisis in American life. The elders at the time always believe that the generation has been so protected and so much such a state of attitude of entitlement that they'll never make it through the hard times. And what these generations have always done is risen to the challenge, showed their elders how to take on the challenge, and by staying united and together, conquered the challenges. So we think that's what will happen in this particular economic crisis as well.
In other words, this whole thing of that, while we looked at the Bush administration and said he never asked the people to do anything, he never asked any sacrifice, now circumstances mean sacrifice is in order. You're saying this generation is ready for that.
Sacrifice and service, because service is what millennials truly believe in.
Okay. And Mike, something that surprised you.
You know, Terrence, I would like to say that there was lots of things that surprised us, but you know, what we did in our book is we looked at past history, we looked at survey research data, and I'm not sure that there was anything that was particularly shocking. It was just as the campaign went on, day after day, and then week after week, and month after month, we would keep finding things that actually confirmed the things we had, events were confirming what we had predicted. I guess if there's any one thing that ultimately surprised me is that in the end that Obama did get the nomination, because there was a lot that could have ultimately happened with party elites and how people would react to that. But that he was able to get the party's nomination. But once he had achieved that, I think we were in pretty much accord that things were
good. Yeah. And especially once the Republicans on their side nominated someone so clearly, so old and so on, that the contrast. I remember Frank Luntz saying, if I were McCain, I would never want to be seen in the same camera shot with Barack Obama.
But I'm not even sure it was so much an age thing. I think there were opportunities for McCain to have taken advantage of this generation, because this is not a dovish pacifist generation. I think his strength on national security could have helped him a great deal. I think where he ultimately McCain did himself in was in nominating Sarah Palin for his vice presidential candidate, because almost from day one millennials rejected her and the kind of divisive politics that she represented. I think the McCain's people may have thought that she was young and she would appeal to young people, but surveys indicate that was just totally not the case.
And young is not young. She was a Gen Xer, and there's nothing that disturbs millennials more than rude Gen X behavior.
Okay, so you thank you very much. Morley Winograd, Mike Hayes, the authors of Millennial Makeover, MySpace, YouTube, and the Future of American Politics. They have a website, millennialmakeover.com. I hope you're right about how they respond to what we're facing right now. Thank you very much, and keep up the good work.
It's great to see you again.